WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. All right, folks, it's Friday, and you know what that means. It's time to recap some of the biggest local and national stories from this week. From delays in primary election results.
The race for Cook County State's attorney still too close to call.
To a federal judge finding the right words in a children's book.
A federal judge is invoking Dr. Seuss to tell former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich to go away.
Of course, we can't cover those and other topics alone. Let's meet our panel. Tamon Bradley is a political reporter and co-anchor of WGN Weekend Evening News. Ray Long is an investigative reporter at the Chicago Tribune, and Amanda Vinicky is a political correspondent for WTTW. Listeners can find a full list of races at WBEZ.org. Election officials, however, saw a shockingly low turnout this Tuesday, both in Chicago and across the state. Tamon, what happened?
22%, Sasha.
Yikes.
It was dismal. It's not like we were in a blizzard or anything like that.
I know. Imagine if it would have been today. Not even blizzard conditions.
Right.
But cold.
Would have been
right.
Even lower.
It was a balmy day.
I'm thinking about around 5 o'clock, the turnout was at 15%. So I guess there was sort of a surge by 7 o'clock. And then with the mail-in ballots, I mean, the bottom line is you can't help but think that perhaps there was some voter fatigue. And oh, by the way, Sasha, we're headed to what would be the lowest presidential primary turnout in 80 years. Unbelievable in the city of Chicago. But yeah, so there's some voter fatigue, right? We voted for mayor twice last year. We voted for governor twice the year before. There were not characters that got people excited. You know, the Cook County State's Attorney's race had the least amount of spending since 2009. It was a low-key contest with not a lot going on. Bring Chicago Home, which I know we're going to talk about, maybe was confusing to some voters. There was just great apathy in Chicago and the suburbs this time.
Yeah, and I mean, do you think we should expect a low turnout again this fall? Like, is this telling us anything?
When you talk to the folks involved in the campaigns, they'll say that, well, the general is different, right? You'll have to make a choice. The presidential contest will animate people. Obviously, with Joe Biden and Donald Trump already having secured enough delegates to be their party's nominees, you know, that'll be confirmed this summer. That was a done deal. That didn't motivate people to get to the polls. But once you have to make an important choice like that, there is thinking that the turnout will increase in November.
Yeah. Well, you know, most election races were called Tuesday evening, but officials needed more time on others because they were just too close to call. One of those races, of course, being the Democratic primary for Cook County State's attorney, Ray. This one's between Democratic candidates Eileen O'Neill Burke and Clayton Harris III. What do we know today, Friday?
Well, they're now getting more and more mail-in ballots, and this is the kind of situation we're in now when we have this broader and longer opportunity to vote. So you're counting mail-ins, and they're approximately 8,000 apart with O'Neill Burke in the lead. But it could change. There's still tens of thousands out, and the margin of O'Neill Burke's lead is closing. So this is the kind of Trump phenomena in reverse, where he was complaining that Joe Biden's votes kept rolling in and rolling in. Well, you see that here, too. So if you're getting used to the whole idea that we're having mail-in votes and early votes and all that kind of stuff, you see the phenomena playing out in real time right now.
You know, can I jump in here? Sure. Just to say, first of all, the votes that are being counted now in terms of mail-ins are from mostly the city of Chicago. And that's where Harris has performed better than O'Neill Burke, mm-hmm. where you had many of the mail-in ballots in the suburbs already having been counted. And what's interesting is, and obviously social media is not the real world, but it is sometimes weird, right? Thank goodness it isn't. But it is instructive, I think. And I have seen a lot of questions, skepticism, backlash over this late counting. So I think it is prudent to explain briefly why that is. And it's because, guess what, y'all? The mail takes time. It's right. not instantaneous. It's not a Dropbox. It's not a text. And so you're allowed to mail in your ballot through primary day, mm-hmm. through the election day. And then Illinois gives, it is longer than other states, 2 weeks for those to make it through the U.S. Postal Service and then be brought in. So there are those who I think are questioning, is this some sort of conspiracy? Right. Is this a way to elevate one candidate or another? When in fact, you have both of the candidates' teams in their campaigns being very present mm-hmm. and, in fact, asking the Chicago elections officials to wait for counting yesterday in order to do it today. That's why we're going to be expecting results this evening, because they wanted to gather folks from their operations right. to be able to witness and monitor all of this. So there is no evidence that there's any impropriety. In fact, it is they're trying to do everything to the letter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two races in the Illinois General Assembly really put the political influence of House Speaker Chris Welch and Senate President rather Don Harmon to the test. I mean, what do you think, Amanda, that hints about what's to come?
You know, I'm not sure that these particular races have any broader takeaways other than that when you are the leader of a caucus, when you're a leader of either the House or the Senate, you have a whole lot of money at your disposal. You're getting a lot of campaign contributions. That's really the big takeaway, is that they were able to lend their influence. And one, Welch's money that was used to defeat the longest serving member of the General Assembly, mm-hmm. A Mary Flowers, who had been there since, I believe, 85. This was able to win things over. On the other hand, this was a Senate race, and the money that Don Harmon put to protect and appoint an incumbent, so somebody who, unlike Flowers, hadn't ever really been tested at the polls, did not succeed. There was over $2 million, though, which is really an astronomical amount of money to spend on a state Senate race, because you're talking about relatively small districts within mm-hmm. the city of Chicago. So those are the main takeaways, but they're both really fascinating races in the sense that you had a Latina versus a Latina, and that's something that the Latino community has said is really a major step yeah. and able to keep that seat that had been held by, actually, we'll be talking about her later, former state Senator Cristina Passione-Zayas, and prior to that, the losing city court clerk, Iris Martinez. And then on the other hand, again, this was Mary Flowers, long-serving state representative, who is very upset about how this went down, unseated by a man who is a higher education administrator, Michael Crawford. And there's a lot to that one, I think.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Mary,
nothing to take away from a broader perspective.
Mary
perhaps.
Dates back to Harold Washington. She mm-hmm. actually... I've seen buttons that she showed me, actually, of her and Harold on the same button. And so she was always a fervent and very passionate legislator. And some people didn't agree with her. Some disagreed with her. And Welch is one that initially agreed with her enough to put her into leadership. And then he didn't like the dissent, and he didn't like all of her taking him off point on various issues in caucus. He kicked her out of caucus, kicked her out of leadership, and then, championed this effort to toss her out, which
it's
is
super rare to have that happen.
Very,
normally,
very
legislative
unusual.
Leaders protect an incumbent. That's
right,
sort of how you,
right.
you keep your seat and in gender loyalty from yeah. within the ranks of legislators. Yeah. So I do think there's more to come on this one, because you have sort of accusations on both sides, with yeah. Welch saying that it was a Flowers behavior and Flowers saying, no, this is what she's basically saying is this is revenge.
Yeah, yeah. This is just unusual too. And that this is they spent all that money on a race that is going to be Democratic seat anyway. Mm-hmm. So
both of those races.
Yeah, 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 right.
What I've been dying to talk about with Illinois 20, Gross Graciela Guzman knocking off Natalie Toro, is it really was a contest of progressives versus someone backed by socialists. So it was progressive versus socialists, you could argue, right? Because Natalie Toro in Springfield is shepherding a bill to lift the ban on rent control. Okay, that's pretty left. But that wasn't left enough. She was a kindergarten teacher, but she had the Chicago Teachers Union backing Guzman.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then you had the Democratic Socialists and City Council backing Guzman in that very progressive area. And so, I think it's sort of a theme in our politics right now. How far left are we going to go? Obviously, with the CTU having the fifth floor right now, that continues to be a challenge because, you know, it's a very liberal city, but some people are saying pump the brakes.
Right. Speaking of pumping the brakes, Mayor Brandon Johnson dealt a huge blow this week, his Bring Chicago Home referendums trailing behind in the votes. It's really hanging in limbo as we speak. The Associated Press estimates 82% of the votes have been counted. What do you think, Tavon? Can we count this measure out?
Yes.
Is there still hope?
Look, I think it's headed for defeat for now. But if, you know, based on what Mayor Johnson was saying Wednesday, it's not over. And I'm not sure what that means. The people who are behind the campaign are saying, all right, well, let's wait for the final results. Let's do some analysis and see where we go. But maybe they'll try to get it on the ballot in a future election when there's higher turnout. But they didn't win the argument. And what's fascinating here, you see it even with police discipline, with the FOP, one of the most serious police discipline cases to be held behind closed doors, a judge ruling on that a couple times. You know, the mayor doesn't back down, right? Like this man at his core is an organizer, and sort of it's, I'm going to get you to bend to my will. And that might not be the right posture after you've lost an election. Mm. You know, you have to sort of own, all right, well, we didn't do a great enough job explaining this, but it certainly was an indictment on his first year and a sense that people don't trust what he's doing. They don't trust his leadership.
They don't.
They also don't understand it. I think media coverage has been complicated. And
the court cases did make it complicated.
The court cases made the referendum complicated. But, you know, this was a major loss. I am told from a source, though, that the Johnson people get that and that the public posture, you know, is not. I was told, quote, they were in their feelings Tuesday night. They should have been there. It was a big loss.
Yeah. I mean, so the mayor there, he says he vows to keep fighting after this referendum was an approved, Amanda. I mean, do we know how he plans on keeping this effort going?
We don't. He's asked a lot of questions about what his plan is going forward, including whether this will be brought back in November or, as Tamon indicated, in the future going forward. I mean, this was certainly part of his mantelpiece of running for mayor.
Yeah.
So it's not going to go away. And frankly, the situation that this money was intended to go toward isn't going away either, and that is the issue of unhoused Chicagoans. And in fact, that's going to be only exacerbated potentially by the migrant situation as they are evicted from shelters. So it is an ongoing issue. I think also ongoing is the complications for the city of Chicago's budget, which would have been unburdensome had this passed, and the political liabilities for Mayor Johnson. He hasn't really said what his path forward is, But I think there is going to see this tension between sort of the ultra progressives and the just regular liberals, you could put it as, and that is a tension that is continuing to simmer, and that you have also the business community that I think we talked a lot about Mayor Johnson not willing to let this go. The business community isn't either. They are going to point to what has happened in other cities, such as, I believe, San Francisco, that enacted something like this, saw really, they believe, turmoil in the real estate market. Mm-hmm. And that's huge. I mean, this is very big money. You're talking quadruple the tax for the real estate transfer tax were this to pass for those big commercial buildings, which are in a world of hurt post-COVID. So they're not going to be letting this go either.
Yeah, so here's another thing, too. I mean, when you look at votes on a neighborhood-by-neighborhood level, right? Journalists this week, I don't know if you all saw, they were quick to point out the map of how, you know, certain areas voted and how it looks like all the other maps that we see in the city of Chicago, right? We look at maps of food deserts here in the city. We see areas that are impacted and areas that aren't. And it looks like the same maps of where gets development and where doesn't, which areas see high policing, which areas don't. So experts like, you know, we got WBEZ Data Projects editor Alden Lowry, who once referred to this one map as a result of an infrastructure of inequity. So to what extent, Ray, do you think that may have worked against Johnson and this whole bring Chicago home plan.
Well, I think it absolutely worked against him. And I think it also deals with what Amanda and Taman were talking about, too, where Johnson's credibility was on the line here. The other thing that struck me about this, Sasha, is that CTU's role in this, they pushed this. They pushed Clayton Harris. They also pushed Toro. Or Guzman, rather, who beat Toro. Mm-hmm. So they had a big success in that Senate race. But if they hadn't come out in strength and put boots on the ground for Bring Chicago Home and Harris, there might have been a bigger margin against Bring Chicago Home, and O'Neill Burke may be cruising right now.
Tax increases are always, Sasha, a tough sell. We saw that with Pritzker's effort to move the state from a flat tax to graduated income tax system. It's just something unfortunately that doesn't connect with a lot of people. You know, when we calculate the number, maybe 68,000-70,000 people facing homelessness, which might mean not just that you're on the street or you're on a CTA train, that you're staying, you know, like it could be me staying with Amanda. That would count as experience.
You're always welcome to, my friend.
Okay, well, then I know I'll never be homeless, but that would count as some form of homelessness. And, you know, some people maybe see that as, okay, that's a step that you have in life at one point. Why should I pay for it? But, you know, and maybe people miss the fact that, you know, that this would raise the real estate transfer tax on homes that are more than $1 million. You know, we're aspirational, and people are like, well, one day I might have $1 million home, and you know, that could impact me.
One day.
That buys
one
into
day.
The argument, too.
No, but I do think it's instructive to look at how this was fought, and clearly you had the progressives who were leading this effort had some major successes in the Izzy Guzman win and getting the Johnson to the fifth floor.
Yeah.
But I do think that calling it a mansion tax was smart, actually. That's something that I would presume would be effective, because most people, $1 million, maybe not what it used to have been, but that is still well beyond the scope of what most people
it's
can imagine
my
having.
Scope, I'll tell you that.
Exactly. There was a press conference where the mayor sort of shied away from that phraseology, and I was like, why? That if you want this to win, that is the phrase. Yeah. But it speaks perhaps to what I had talked about earlier in terms of questions about how ballots are being counted. First of all, what exactly would this money be going toward? But even if you have that, there's just a skepticism in government, mm-hmm. period. And that gets to, I think, the lack of voter turnout,
right.
The lack of appetite for sending more folks hard-earned money. It is not just Chicago, not just Illinois. We're seeing this sort of apathy and frustration play out in so many arenas.
So speaking of frustration, because if this wasn't enough, Mayor Johnson's also losing his chief of staff. This is after less than a year in office. Richard Guidis is leaving after nearly 35 years, though, in city government. Now, it sounds from an inside source that there was tension between Guidis and Brandon Johnson. Here's 36th Ward Alderman Gilbert Villegas reacting to the news.
From what I've heard, there's been a lot of frustration around who's in charge. When you're the chief of staff, the presumption is that you're in charge. And unfortunately, my understanding from discussions with folks is that he'd make a decision and then sometimes it'd be overturned. And at some point, you got to make a decision whether or not you're being undermined. And I think, you know, with 30 plus years of service, he has that flexibility to wake up and go, I'm done.
So it sounds like a pretty tricky dynamic there to overcome, Tom. But I mean, did Guidis say why now, why he's leaving?
No, he never explained in the public discussions that he's had. Look, you know, it goes back to the activists are now bureaucrats, and they're trying to figure this thing out. But remember when he was appointed, it was sort of a nod to the old guard at City Hall that I'm going to have an experienced old hand around, someone well-respected by police and fire who had run OEMC, had gotten through some difficult days, you know, during COVID and our summer where we had those riots. But I have no doubt that he's not as progressive as some of the other people in Mayor Johnson's ear. If it is Christina Passione-Zayas, former state senator, who was the deputy chief of staff, she's wicked smart.
Totally.
You know, she's very far left, for sure, but she knows policies. She's good at selling it. Mm-hmm. She's good at coalition building.
Hard worker.
So, you know, resets are not a bad thing for a mayor who, you know, most people would say needs a little bit of a reset.
Yeah, I like that word.
I know you love that word.
I love that word.
Yeah. WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
The city of Chicago is suing the popular firearms maker Glock over how easy it can be converted into an automatic weapon. Ray, fill us in.
There's a problem here because there is an easy fix to make a regular gun into basically a machine gun. One press of the trigger and you can have several bullets come out by inserting something called a switch in basic vernacular of the street.
Yeah.
And you can make this so much more dangerous by also adding a large clip, and you can fire like a machine gun.
And so we're clear, when you convert it into a switch, I mean, what does it do exactly?
Instead, just press it once, and then it fires rapidly, right, versus having to use your index finger to individually shoot off a bullet.
Right. Uh-huh. And so if you have a slow index finger, it's really good to have one pull on it. And actually, in all seriousness, it does make it rapid fire.
Yeah.
And so if you load it up with a big clip too, with multiple bullets, more than you usually have, then you can do a lot of damage really fast. Mm. And so they're trying to say that Glock knows of this, they should fix it, they should make it into a gun that rejects these kinds of switches that can be bought for $25 and make your gun very dangerous.
Yeah. Is it right, Ray, that you can print this with the 3D printing thing?
Yes.
My goodness.
Yes. With your capabilities on 3D printer, man, you can just go crazy. And you could sell them, too. You could make them and sell them and just...
Illegally, but that's not to say it's not done.
Yeah, right. There's an illegal problem with guns already on the street. Mm-hmm. Making it more powerful is even more dangerous.
Interesting. Well, another story on our radar this week, Ray. This one has to do with former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich.
Oh, man.
Yeah, a federal judge recently criticized him over his challenge to a state resolution prohibiting him from running for state or local office. What?
I've had this queued up all week.
You're fired up to talk about this one.
The judge, Stephen Seeger, is one who just didn't hold back on this. He talked about how Blagojevich was not only impeached, he was thrown out by the Illinois Senate. It wasn't a close vote. It was 117-1 in the House. And I believe, Amanda, correct me if I'm wrong, the one vote was his sister-in-law.
Correct.
And then the Senate voted 59-0, and then he was convicted, and then he served time in prison until twice impeached president commuted the sentence of a twice impeached governor. Mm-hmm. So then he wanted to say, well, this is all unconstitutional. They didn't have the authority to do that, so he went to federal court.
But by the way, may I jump in here to say that he filed this lawsuit serving as his own attorney with a documentary crew in tow. So I was there for it.
I wonder when it comes out.
It's already out.
It's out.
The documentary is out. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so, it's sad.
Well, that would be why the judge called this a publicity stunt.
Yes,
and
yes,
said,
yes.
And quoted Dr. Seuss at him saying, just go, go, go.
Oh.
I don't care how. You can go by foot. You can go by cow.
I mean, let's just say that Judge Seeger, I want to have a beer with this man. Just the most entertaining. Who knew that a legal brief or ruling would be entertaining? And this one is full of zingers. There's the Dr. Seuss. I wrote it down. There's if the problems within the lawsuit are, quote, fish in a barrel, the complaint contains an entire school of tuna.
Yeah.
It started with a megaphone, ended with a whimper. I mean, just kept them coming.
Yeah.
I as someone who was not around for Blagojevich, I was in Washington still, I just don't pay attention to him. So I'm always amused, you know, at how much we're interested in what he's up to. And it's just...
How many people are like, take pictures of him on his job, selfies.
Yes.
He's a character.
Yeah. I think he still does the thing where you can have him call up and wish you a happy birthday or something.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, one of those,
thing.
Cameo or whatever.
Cameo,
it's called.
That's
Oh, boy. All right.
Sorry, I had a colleague. We for her birthday, we actually got her a cameo. I was not involved with that, I must say, because again, I don't.
A Blagojevich cameo?
Oh, yeah, it was a joke.
Oh my gosh!
But he wished
it
her happy birthday.
Joke, I'm sure.
boy, all right. How long did we just talk about Rob Blagojevich?
See, there we go.
And now we're moving on. On to the CTA with Amanda. the city's transit system plans to revive some routes that were cut during the pandemic.
Yeah, because people weren't riding during the pandemic. The issue being that even as folks have returned to work, at least somewhat, leaving work from home, there aren't a return of all of the drivers being willing to get behind the wheel of a CTA bus, frankly, also a school bus. That's an ongoing issue for mm-hmm. CPS as well as suburban schools and L trains. But they're bringing back nearly 30, I believe, 29 yeah, different routes, including some of the most popular. I will selfishly say that this includes more routes on the 66 and the 82, mm-hmm. two of the buses that I ride most frequently and yeah. have been pained by waiting. Mm-hmm. And so this is hopefully going to resolve some of the many riders' complaints that they're having a hard time getting to work, inconsistent mm-hmm. scheduling, and unable to really rely on a yeah. service that needs to be reliable in yeah. order for them to be reliable in their occupations.
Yeah, I'm yeah. personally eyeing the number 8 Halsted. Yes.
We all have our lines.
We all have our lines.
I think we've all been ghosted, too, during this time.
So
we're sitting there waiting for it. We think it's coming. The sign says it's coming, and it doesn't show up. So they're hoping that they can fix this mess.
Yeah, our producer Brenda Ruiz says, this morning I got off the train to catch the 66, and that wasn't coming for 27 minutes.
Oof. 27. Yes.
But there's a new day, Brenda. It's a new day.
But she
coming.
Still made it in on time.
And she did. Yeah. And she's here producing the recap today.
Thank you, Brenda.
Look at that. Come on, let's turn to another story here. Chicago's got the most lead pipes in the country. And there's a recent study from Johns Hopkins that was published this week saying that children in Chicago, I believe is under 6 years old, they're in significant danger from lead exposure in our drinking water.
Johns Hopkins and Stanford both have looked at this, and that's right. More than, a majority of children under the age of 6 have some exposure to the lead in the water. They're drinking it. They're taking it in. Of course, it's in predominantly Black and Hispanic neighborhoods. The mayor will tell you that by EPA standards that the water is safe, but the issue are the lead service lines. We've mm-hmm. got 400,000 plus lead service lines, and it's a question of how fast they can replace them.
How much progress has the city made on this?
Well, they've been working on it for a while, but they're nowhere near where they need to be. And it's, will it take decades? Will it be 10 years? The federal government, which has provided money, you can stretch this out over decades. But the problem is, you've got 6-year-olds, 5-year-olds, who are exposed to the lead water right now, and it's it's expensive, mm-hmm. it's complicated, it's slow, it has been on the front burner now for some time. There's not a quick fix.
Yeah. My goodness.
The results are sad, too.
They are.
Because you can affect generations with this kind of mistake,
Yeah,
the city estimates it'll take about 40 years. EPA has a standard of 10 years for the rest of the country, but it'll take us a long time.
And
because, again, we have that many.
Yeah, we do. And that's where you would hope, government would step in and just handle this and take care of it. This has been a problem for a very long time. This didn't just begin, and Chicago lags far behind, and it's an environmental justice issue.
Yeah, we're going to talk much more about this topic Monday on Reset. Now, there's another study, Amanda, that I want to talk about with you. It's renewing calls for regulation around hemp products. What do we know here?
Well, so this gets to what you probably notice as you're walking around. I feel like they are just so omnipresent, and this is those vaping shops or even, frankly, a gas station.
Oh, they're everywhere.
They're everywhere. And this is, we know when Illinois allowed for recreational cannabis, it's a very tightly regulated market. And that's why, in part, the products are more expensive because they go through many processes in testing and licensing. These products that have been allowed through a federal farm bill that basically lifted the lid open on hemp. And so they're called Delta 8, mm-hmm. Delta 9, Delta 10. They don't have that THC per se, but they still are similar and so much cheaper. But because they're not licensed, because they don't have that testing or regulation, this new study that comes from UIC, I believe,
yes,
found that many of them had far more either other components. We don't even know. They weren't tested for mold or bacteria, but in terms of what actually is in them, that in many far stronger than advertised. And so that can lead, of course, to issues, particularly because you can have young people buying them and that impacts their smaller bodies and growing brains more so. So there have been calls both but in the city of Chicago as well as in the state legislature to regulate this. We have had that breakdown in the past because you sort of have people fighting on how it should be regulated, whether they should be completely made illegal or whether it should just be sort of tightening the reins. So that's a discussion that is continuing. But meanwhile, these products are becoming more and more prevalent.
Yeah, the study found that 93% of tested edibles and all of the flower products had inaccurate THC labeling with up to 456% more THC than stated.
That's a lot. And again, state marijuana products are controlled by how much they can have.
And you can wash it down with lead-laced water, too.
There you go. You know, it's sort of a theme. I think it's the challenge for this generation is the technology has made it so difficult for the law to keep up with it, whether we're talking about you being able to upgrade your perfectly legal weapon with a 3D printer and, you know, it becomes a machine gun. Or in this case, where it's, you know, it's super weed and things that aren't regulated that we have no idea what it is.
It's
weird because it's supposed to be diet weed is kind of what it's known as, but then it becomes super,
diet's almost
super
worse.
Weed.
It's diet, always right? worse for you. They always say that. That's what they say. I don't know if that's true. But
I'm learning so many things from my panelists today. I don't know what this says. A proposed ordinance could rename one downtown street after former President Barack Obama. Ray, when was this introduced to city council? Give us the details.
This is Lamont Robinson, the guy who is a former legislator who is now trying to get Columbus Drive turned into Obama Drive or Avenue or whatever. But the problem he encountered immediately was that the Italian folks here in town have protested that why should we be taking Columbus out? That's even the street that they march up and down. They've had some of their statues removed. You know, maybe they would have to reconsider use State or Wabash or something else. But, you know, it's a good idea to have a street named after Obama. He's a guy who came right out of Chicago. There's nothing wrong with that. It just may take a lot of convincing to rename a street like Columbus where they celebrate each year.
The Italian community is very upset about this.
Robinson says the renaming would create a new tourism destination downtown. That's kind of his big idea. What were you saying, Kamal?
I don't know about that, but that's the argument, right? So it has some prominent co-sponsors. I saw Pat Dial's name on there. Hard to believe Brandon Johnson would step in and try to work up a compromise as Lori Lightfoot did with DeSable Lakeshore Drive, which of course was unsuccessful. So I would imagine this may go, you know, which would irk the nerves of that Italian American civic group as, you know, they say we're canceling Christopher Columbus, but tough to vote against Barack Obama, although you know, obviously opposition to the Obama Center, and they wanted the guaranteed benefits for the community and all of that. And that continues to be contentious in some quarters. But I would bet, Ray and Amanda, that one goes.
There's certainly a greater connection, one would think, between Barack Obama to Chicago than Columbus, who, you know, not really big.
somebody popped up on my Twitter and said, you know, I don't agree with everything Columbus was doing, and I'm not exactly in his corner, but I'm Italian, and I still think that this ought to be an Obama drive.
There is, by the way, a section of I-55 that is named after Obama already. But unless you're like us who, you know, drives 55 frequently heading down to our state capital, you may be completely unaware of that. And it is just a stretch. Mm-hmm.
And if you can't drive 55, you really miss it.
Yes.
Well, speaking of Obama, you know, his organization just released a preview of the Presidential Center's athletic facility. It's currently under construction, as we know, near Jackson Park. Has anyone by chance seen the renderings of this? Pretty cool. It's got it's going to be dubbed the home court. It's going to include a basketball facility tucked away in that southwest corner.
Lots of natural light. It looks beautiful. I think there's a cool ADA accessible playground nearby.
Yes.
I mean, it all looks really lovely. I don't think it resolves the questions that Taman was talking about.
Not at all.
Frustrations with
basketball will be played.
Yes, and by youth from the community is the intent. That this is not one of these, you know, it's not joining, East Bank for however much that costs. it's a different sort of plan to bring youth in, get them involved and busy and having a place to play hoops like the former president enjoys.
Yeah. Go in there, shoot up some bricks, absolutely.
Yeah. It should be the first space to open in late 2025, so we've still got a ways to go there. But here's what's not a ways to go. That's the DNC. That's coming up sooner than we think, right? And there's a social justice group appealing the decision to block protests. Taman, how's the city responding to that?
Sasha, this is in Chicago this summer?
Yes.
I hadn't heard that. Oh,
yes.
My goodness.
On my birthday weekend.
Oh, how about that?
The nerve.
What a gift to you.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, you've got some groups that it's a First Amendment question, right? They want to be able to protest reasonably close to the United Center. The city would prefer that they're 3 miles away. And so that's got to be where obviously the news camera is going to be harder to get. Three miles. It might take you an hour, 2 hours to get 3 miles, you know, when the convention's in town with the Secret Service, road closures and what the city is going to have to do to keep it safe. So, can't help but wonder if what they did in 1996 under the Daley administration, where they had a lottery, mm-hmm. where, hey, you can pick and, you know, come on in here. But these groups don't want to be in a confined sort of controlled area. They want to be able to do what they want to do. But it's a question of how far does the First Amendment extend when you're having a big event? You have a right to protest, but government has a right to tell you kind of where the protest goes.
Grand Park's going to be busy this summer. Very, very busy. The schedule leaves just a few days of free access after hosting the Latin Music Festival Sueños, NASCAR, and Lollapalooza. Anybody excited to welcome NASCAR back?
Mm.
Wow. What does that mean?
That was Ray.
Ray? Want to share your thoughts with the rest of the class?
Okay, teacher. It's a weird place to be doing it, but it is a beautiful scenery.
Yes.
It is really captivating when you saw the TV shots of it.
Yeah.
Even my wife, who was not a NASCAR fan, it was like, wow, I'm watching this on TV. And she sat down and watched the whole thing, mm-hmm. and it was beautiful.
Even with all the rain, right?
Yeah. And if you don't have rain, it should be a lot more fun and a lot more exciting for everybody who's there. But wow.
Anything you would do differently, Amanda?
Well, they are doing something differently, and that is it's going to take, I'm unclear as to if it's just because it's been done once and they have the lessons and the setup or if there's a change, but it's going to take fewer days to set up, which is why Grant Park in large part will be less busy, because NASCAR turning a park in a downtown into a race course takes some time. It's not naturally made for that, but lessons learned, and I certainly NASCAR and everybody who spends the money is a NASCAR fan or a fan of the musical acts that they're bringing in is going to be hoping for better weather. And if you're going to do that, it befits Chicago. If the city has made this decision to go forward with it, the more people that attend and enjoy it, the better it is for the city, because at least if you're going to keep everything closed down, you get more money for it.
Did you go last year?
I did not. I was working on duty at Channel 9, but the pictures were astonishing. It's amazing.
So if you had the mayor's ear about hosting NASCAR this year, what would you say?
Well, you know, get a fair deal. Jason Lee, last summer told us that they tweaked some things and it'll work out better, such as we were talking about with the cleanup time and the preparation time. Remains to be seen. I mean, we've got to take a deeper look at that contract and next time. But you want to make sure that there's city benefit. Obviously, NASCAR went into communities and engaged. But some of that is to their benefit as they try to expand their audience. You're going to naturally do that when you come to a city of Chicago. But, yeah, I think it's tough. A lot of people live in the loop. I used to live in the loop. And those disruptions are very frustrating. You have to balance that.
A real Chicago experience, like go down Halsted at noon sometime, you know, or LSD. Why not DuSable LSD, by the way.
Anybody see the Lollapalooza lineup that just got released? SZA.
Yeah.
Tyler, the creator, Blink-182, Hosier.
I mean, the millennial of me is really pumped for Blink-182.
Victoria Monet.
I would go. Every time it reminds me just how old I'm getting, because I'm like, wait, who are some of these ex?
Well, you know what?
I need to get my Spotify playlist going.
Let me just keep my transparency thing going here. I had to ask right before we started. Yes. I had to ask one of our producers, what's this name? Hosier?
Right?
I did not know how to say that.
It's hard. And I'll have another confession. I've actually never been to Lollapalooza. It was always my family vacation. Mm. So I don't know.
That's okay. Don't feel bad. Me either.
My daughter went last year and had a blast, but my heart was in my throat.
Lived in the South Loop, so I felt Lollapalooza. I saw it leaving as I was trying
to get
home.
All the beats.
All of it makes me excited for summer, though. I mean, NASCAR, Pitchfork, Lolla, I don't care. Get me the sunshine. Yeah. Let's get that going.
Ray, you've been to Lolla. I know it.
Totally. Well,
I have a confession.
It's
a shutout, apparently, with this crew here. So, does that cost us a few points of cool now to everybody that's listening?
I was going to say, at Pitchfork, some of these names I've actually heard of. So, I knew SZA, of course.
But, yes.
Alanis Morissette. You've got Carly Rae.
Pitchfork has a different vibe this year, right? This is for the more mature crowd.
Older is what you're trying to say, right?
No, mature.
Mature. Carly Rae Jepsen. I think I downloaded maybe one of her songs.
One of her newer songs?
Carly Rae Jepsen.
A long time ago, yeah.
Call Me Maybe?
Call Me Maybe. That's the one.
Come on.
She was here last year for something. I don't know. I randomly ended up at an event last year, and they were like, please welcome Carly Rae Jepsen. And I was like, what? And then I wound up like right at the front, and then I had the time of my life. And I knew like a good three or four songs. I was
ecstatic. That song is an earworm in a good way.
Yeah. All right. So the Bank of America Shamrock Shuffle.
Mm.
Yes.
That one I have done.
I'm gonna. I'm not gonna do that one this year.
I was today years old when I learned about the Shamrock Shuffle. I thought it was a dance, but it's taking over the Chicago streets again this weekend. Ray, I mean, have you run it?
No, I have not. There are some streets that will remain open, and those are DuSable, Lakeshore Drive, Ida B. Wells Drive, North Michigan Avenue. Do you want me to run through the closures?
Yes, please.
I've always wanted to do this. Columbus Drive from Roosevelt Road to Grand Avenue will be closed. Grand Avenue to Columbus Drive to State Street. State Street from Grand to Wacker. Wacker from State to Washington, et cetera, et cetera. I'm telling you, it is a big list of closures. Try to stay on DuSable, Ida B. Wells, and North Michigan Avenue, folks. Back to you, Sasha.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you for that traffic report, Ray. Now, Amanda, you said that you've run this before. What was that like?
You know, at the time, it was chilly, and I have to share, this is maybe, sorry, listeners, if you don't really care, but it was the day after my best friend's wedding, like literally my best friend from kindergarten.
Aww.
So let me just say that it was impressive that I got there.
Yes.
If you are running it for the first time, be warned that there is a lot of standing around. Unless you are one of the very first runners, there's a reason that they have heats. This is a popular event.
Yes.
Go figure. Chicago loves St. Patrick's Day, loves its Irish, loves a good 5K. This is more than a 5K, I think. But still,
how long is it?
To run to. I forget. It's been a while.
My bestie. 8K.
It's a longer run, but it's gorgeous. I mean, this is sort of not exactly the NASCAR route, but you know, it's similar where you're running through these gorgeous buildings with skyscrapers, so there's a lot to stay entertained. It's a blast of a run.
You know, they should make that a NASCAR route. Then they
that
do
would
a
be.
8K. They could do go-karts.
Run
could have
the
all
course
kinds
before.
Of
the,
yeah,
I like that idea.
Yeah, you're
maybe
wearing
I'd
green
get in shape
too.
Enough to do it.
Yeah, there you
maybe.
Go.
All right, we'll end it there. That's the weekly news recap for you. My thanks to WGN's Tamon Bradley, the Chicago Tribune's Ray Long, and Amanda Vinicky with WTTW. Have a great weekend, folks.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Brenda Ruiz, and it was edited by Meha Ahmed. The news cycle moves fast, so our weekly news recap gives us the opportunity to slow down. Now, if you enjoy our recap as much as we do, well, consider leaving us a rating and liking this podcast. It helps us share these stories with more people in and around the city. Thanks for listening, and have yourselves a restful weekend.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely.